Hey everybody, welcome to Roger and Me, aka Roger Ebert and Me, a weekly movie review podcast that also functions as a tribute to Siskel and Ebert. It's hosted by myself, Brett Arnold, and film critic Mark Dusick, where we aim to cover every new theatrical release and every new streaming release every Friday, and we aim to review them in the format that Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert pioneered on a little TV show called At the Movies. It was once called Siskel and Ebert, I believe, or maybe it was At the Movies with Siskel and Ebert. It was definitely coming soon to a theater near you very briefly in the 70s. It's a show that's kind of started movie podcasting, whether they knew it or not, many, many years before the actual movie podcasting started. So we're just trying to keep the tradition alive. We're aiming to be your guide to new release movies. Are these new movies worth seeing? Are they not? We're going to tell you all you need to know about them. This week, six new movies, including a new Godzilla movie and a new King Kong movie, all wrapped in one. It's Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, the sequel to Godzilla vs. Kong, and I think the fourth movie in the Monsterverse, if you count the 2014 Gareth Edwards Godzilla, which is a fantastic movie and has nothing in common with the rest of them. If you count that as a starting point, which it is technically, there's four of these movies. We're talking about that. There's a new Liam Neeson that's a little different than his usual action star stuff, but also kind of the same at the same time. There's a new movie that they can that stars Sean Penn and Ty Sheridan that does not feel like it debuted at a fancy festival. There's a movie called Dogman, directed by Luc Besson, that is just the Joker, but a little different. There's a movie called Lazy Carter, starring David Krumholtz, character actor phenom, and star of Oppenheimer. And we've got a Steve Buscemi-directed film. I do not believe it's his directorial debut. I think it's at least his second. But it stars Tessa Thompson, and it debuted at Tribeca Film Festival, if that tells you anything. If you know anything about me, that does mean something, but I'll let it slide if you don't. What's going on, Mark?
Not much.
Good answer. Yeah, I like it. I know, short and sweet. Hopefully listeners can't hear that there's a bird right outside Mark's window right now that is very talkative. And hopefully you guys can hear that, but just know that Mark is sitting there and he can hear that. It's going to drive him crazy the whole episode. But I put on the noise, background noise filter, and it seems to have worked. So I know there might be some audio problems sometimes at this podcast, but right now we're killing it with the bird filter being out. But yeah, there's nothing else to talk about. We don't need to belabor the point. I do want to mention up top, I did this on my other podcast last week, and it was very fruitful of an ask. So if you guys find this podcast to be quieter than other podcasts you listen to, if there's a volume based issue with this podcast, please let us know. You can tweet at me at Brett Redacted on Twitter or X. You can email the pod at rogerandmepod@gmail.com. Just say, hey, it is quieter than other podcasts I listen to. I do have to turn up my volume way higher. It is something I fixed on the other show, but because how this show is recorded, Mark and I do video here. I don't do video on my other one. It's a different set of circumstances that I have to figure out if it is too quiet. So let me know. I hope it's not true, but it might be. Moving right along to the meat of the show, let's get right into Godzilla Kong, The New Empire.
For centuries, there was harmony. The Titans were the guardians of nature, and the great apes became the protectors of humanity.
Maybe you can help me with something, Mark. I don't think I'll ever rewatch Godzilla vs. Kong, but that was much more enjoyable of an experience than this movie is. And I'm not sure why or how that is, because this movie definitely feels similar and like it's doing similar stuff, but it also plays as much worse and not entertaining to me. Like, I have fond memories of seeing Godzilla vs. Kong opening day in IMAX. Yes, it was the first movie we got to see blockbuster size after COVID or in the middle of COVID or whatever it was. So I'm wondering if that was part of the circumstance, just like we all were so excited for a movie that we like gave it a pass. Or is that movie really better than this one, which I found to be loathsome garbage? Very bad. I did not like this movie at all.
Oh, you really didn't like it?
Yeah, I
really didn't like it on principle. If you listen to my other podcast, you've heard me talk about this when we talked about Godzilla King of the Monsters. You heard me talk about this when we talked about Godzilla versus Kong. The way these movies look is like just a problem that I have with them. Like, the CGI characters are not impressive enough, and they're in unconvincing CGI backgrounds too. So there's just nothing to the action or any of it or the spectacle. It just does nothing for me. So the movie starts at a deficit and has to work up from there. And from this one, from the opening sweeping shot of Hollow Earth with flying dinosaur-like birds or whatever, I was just thoroughly unimpressed.
I think Godzilla vs. Kong is a lot of fun. That movie wants to have fun. It knows that we're there to see a giant lizard and a giant ape fight, and it gives us that. And I think it has some of the more interesting human characters in all of these movies, which is something that this franchise, the specific franchise, the American Godzilla one, and even sometimes the Japanese movies have trouble with, is figuring out how to use human characters properly. That we saw it with Godzilla Minus One. Obviously they can do it right.
Yes,
at least in Japan. Here it's all this balance of exposition and comic relief, and the fact that
comic
Godzilla
relief
Kong.
Yeah, I was going to say comic relief that needs a punch up desperately is what I will
desperately
say.
Desperately here, for sure. I think it worked in Godzilla versus Kong because Brian Tyree Henry is so much fun as that conspiracy podcaster who's following all the monsters. And he comes back, and Rebecca Hall comes back, and then the girl who can comes back. And that's it. That's the end of the cast from Godzilla versus Kong or any of the other ones that return. And I kind of missed having any of those other characters that did work the last time, because Dan Stevens' Titan Veterinarian doesn't quite cut the mustard in terms of the comic relief. He's funny, he's goofy, but the rest of the movie isn't funny or goofy, and that's the problem. It's not fun. It's so much talking about what Godzilla is up to, talking about what Kong is up to, talking about the ancient myth of the big battle that used to happen between Godzilla's race and Kong's race. And it just goes on and on and on. And I couldn't take it anymore.
I said the same thing to my buddy. I think it was almost at the 2-hour mark. It was almost over. And the exposition dumps were still happening. I was like, there's still just it just never stopped. The exposition just never stops. And it's not interesting exposition. It's all made up as it goes along sort of shit. And there's also like a reveal in this movie of a creature late in the movie that I swear to God was in another one of these MonsterVerse movies. And yes, they like retconned it or just kind of pretended that never happened and changed the mythology of it. But like, it's supposed to be a reveal that people applaud for, and my crowd weirdly did applaud for it, but I just found it to be weightless as anything else in this movie, because my big problem with it, and like we can quibble with like the specifics of the humans, which I agree they're bad. I also couldn't believe that they go into Hollow Earth, I guess, is the premise of this movie. Kong's in Hollow Earth.
Deeper levels to the level of Earth.
What if there was a Hollower Earth is a question that's asked. And really, this is more of a Kong movie with Godzilla garnish, I would say. But I was talking about the weightlessness of the proceedings. There's just no stakes to any of this because there's not a real element, including a real, say, location or anything to ground you. So it's just weightless CGI creatures throwing weightless CGI buildings at each other. And it sounds fun on paper, and it really does play like a live-action cartoon. Or, sorry, live-action cartoon is completely wrong. It plays like a cartoon because it is animated entirely. It is completely animated. It just is computers, and there are parts with humans that are intercut between the animated segments. But I would largely say these are animated movies based on how much is computer generated. All of it. Everything you're seeing on screen is computer generated. And there's, it just does nothing for me. I think in the other ones, I mean, to be clear, I really didn't like Kong Skull Island. I really didn't like King of the Monsters. I really just like the Gareth Edwards ones. And you think about like what the difference is. And it's like that movie had atmosphere, first of all. It's all atmosphere, arguably. And it's like Godzilla is teased throughout and barely shown. And when he is, you feel the weight of it. And it's scary and it's terrifying. And that movie is visually beautiful and well shot. And it's like they couldn't run further away from that with every other movie. Did you like that one?
Yeah, I like that one. And I think the big problem was that everybody complained there wasn't enough Godzilla in the Godzilla movie.
Yeah, so
was,
they, yeah.
I mean, a mistake, I think. Because there's not that much Godzilla and Godzilla Minus One, and everybody loves Godzilla Minus One.
It's like seeing Jaws and going, there wasn't enough Jaws in it. And it's like, the whole reason Jaws works is because it's used sparingly. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the whole point. So that's another big fundamental problem with Godzilla Kong. They're just there. They're just there doing stuff. There's no buildup. They're main characters, essentially.
That is also because it has set all of this up already. That's what's the most frustrating part about this exposition of this. Dumping of exposition is that all this stuff has been established. It got established in the last one when they just said Godzilla and Kong used to fight a lot in the past, in the ancient past. They are creatures that from a race, different races and species of creatures that used to fight all the time. We already know all of this. We don't need all to be told all of this, because you know what? The director, Adam Wingard, it's going to sound really silly me saying this, but he uses visual language to actually tell the story.
Oh, yeah.
When they're not talking. This is really simple stuff. You don't need to tell us what's happening. That last battle.
WWE match between the two.
Rio. Yeah. It takes place in Rio.
Yeah.
There are no characters talking over that. You can tell exactly what's happening. You understand what Kong needs to do. And all of that stuff.
Oh,
you understand
like Kong exactly. Trying to wrangle Godzilla without fighting him, but Godzilla doesn't understand that's what's happening. Yeah.
It's that kind of stuff. Well, that's even before what I'm talking about. I'm just saying the actual last battle, like with the crystal. I don't want to talk too much.
This forgettable garbage.
Dumb stuff. It's dumb stuff, whatever. But the point is, you don't have a human character standing there going like, oh, now Kong needs to get the crystal because the crystal powers that other monster. And if that he can figure that out, then he can use the other monster. Like, we don't need to be told that. We can see it.
Yeah.
And that's what's so frustrating. Once you see that final action sequence, actually just tell the story visually with the computer generated characters. I'm assuming they spent a lot of money on and a lot of time on who are expressive. That you might think they look like cartoons, and I get that, but they are expressive.
Yeah,
they do have personality to them, which is, I think, a little bit better than, not even better. It's a different sort of thing than being realistic looking. If they have personality, I'm okay with
it.
And these have personality.
I guess they do. I mean, you can definitely tell what Kong is. Yeah, he's emoting and stuff. But, like, put it next to, like, Peter Jackson's King Kong from 2005, even.
Yeah.
And, like, that movie is 20 years old and eats all modern blockbusters lunch in terms of, like, visuals and CGI and how it looks and feeling like the character is real and stuff like that. I was just not for a second convinced by any of this movie, and that really just kept me out of enjoying it. And, like, I'm all for dumb fun. I just think this movie is all dumb and no fun. It's not fun to watch Rebecca Hall go, oh, one more thing. Here's more lore. Every single scene is like that with her. I felt bad for her. She just kept like, oh, yeah, here's some more cave paintings on the walls that explain more bullshit. And, yeah, and it's very obvious what they're doing with the girl who doesn't talk, and they just do it. And then, I don't know. So, like, I mean, I'm not going to pick it apart from a story standpoint. This is a Godzilla Kong giant monsters fighting movie. But it's just, it doesn't even work as a compelling movie in terms of, like, every time, didn't it feel like two different movies were happening? It's just like, we keep cutting to Godzilla, who's in other places. It just didn't feel like it was connected in any real way. And I found it to be funny that, you know, Monarch is around to try to, like, wrangle these two. But, like, what's their plan for Godzilla? Because it seems like their plan is, he just fucks shit up, and then they go, oh, thank God, he took a nap in the Colosseum. Like, we're good for a day. It seems like I don't know what their plan is beyond that.
And meanwhile, all the world militaries, whenever Godzilla shows up, are like, we don't want this giant monster in our country. Do you understand that? Because it is still, yes, it destroyed the other giant monster, but it's still, when it steps out of the Colosseum, it's knocking over half of it.
Yeah,
we don't want that.
Yeah, there's an issue.
That's a good point. What is their plan? Who knows? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't matter. And the problem is this movie makes it matter.
Yes. Yeah. I couldn't believe what I was watching and just not enjoying myself, because it really is such silliness that has like portals and there's a zero gravity fight in it. It's a cartoon. And I enjoy cartoons, and I did not enjoy this one. It's a 1.5-star movie for me. I really was disappointed with it after enjoying the last entry, despite not enjoying the previous entries before that. So I guess this is the fifth one then, actually. I think I said it was the fourth earlier.
I think you said, because you talked about Kong Skull Island. I think that's technically the fifth, the one that you missed.
Yes.
2 stars for me. I'm going to be a little more generous. I think it's better than, you know, Godzilla King of the Monsters, which was just awful, because that's another one that has a problem with just explaining everything, but that has more human characters. That has too many human characters doing all the explaining, and I didn't buy the visual effects or any of the, you know, supposedly fancy shot composition in that one. So,
and I wish I liked this Godzilla
Cross Kong.
Yeah, Godzilla Cross Kong, The New Empire, Godzilla X Kong. I can't believe I didn't enjoy a movie where King Kong goes to the dentist, but it just doesn't work because of the lack of, I don't know. I just don't care about Godzilla and Kong, or Kong as a character, I guess, because I don't feel like the movie puts in the work to make you care. And then, of course, the introduction of like Baby Kong, it's all just ticking boxes on like how to make blockbusters like this, and it just really, really did nothing for me. But you know, as you said, the visual language stuff, is there's something to be said about that, because there's whole sequences with Kong that are wordless early on too, that are like, they get what they need to say across. So yeah, it really is frustrating.
Set up so he's trying to outwit these monsters, these like giant rodents of unusual size, I think you could call them.
Yeah, I wish I could get behind it. It's really like the stakes thing and the lack of them, and the fact that there's just no weight to any of the battles or anything. It's just no reason to like get invested in any single element of it for me. It really didn't work. But that's okay. I will be there for the next time Godzilla and or Kong get up to any shenanigans. Man, I could talk all day about how I think it's crazy that movies don't look looked better in 2005. In terms of big blockbuster spending $200 million on a movie, like what does it look like now versus then? How did it get worse? It got worse. We accept baseline worse stuff, and it makes money, so the studios have no incentive to spend more money to make it look better, is where I think my cynical mind goes. Let's move on to Liam Neeson in the Land of Saints and Sinners.
Try and do some good before you find yourself here.
My girl, don't lie to me.
Finbar Murphy.
I've had something else for you in a week or so.
I've been thinking. Been a lifetime of poor choices I've made.
In the past. How many people have you killed altogether?
This movie is like The Banshees of Inisherin, but if it was about a hitman breaking up with his handler. I don't want to do murders no more. That's what this movie's about. It does star Kerry Condon of Banshees of Inisherin, and it stars Liam Neeson, of course. I think we're going to end up in the exact same place on this movie. But for a while, I was enjoying it as like, this is a more, I don't know, somber and a more stately or something. It just felt like a cut above the like direct-to-video kind of Liam Neeson energy that we've been getting as of late. It felt like it was doing something a little different. But then ultimately, it's still kind of boring, right?
It ultimately is very straightforward and just routine thriller-ish, which is really too bad, because it does start off strong with Neeson's character as an assassin. For whatever reason, I think he's just a general assassin. I don't think there's any political angle to it. Although this is in the 1970s, so the troubles are going on in Ireland.
The troubles.
The troubles. that understated way the Irish have of saying awful things. The Troubles, where a bunch of people killed each other over religion and politics. So that's going on in the background. But I think he's just a hitman, and he goes out into the woods to kill this guy. And they have this really intense scene. And it's obviously, setting up the theme and everything, because the guy's like, oh, do some good in the world before you die, because you're going to die if you're doing this sort of work. And, his character realizes, oh, I should probably do some good in the world before I end up dead. So he decides to retire as being an assassin. And then into his small little Irish town comes Carrie Condon's character and her team of IRA members who are just blew up a pub in Belfast, and now they're on the run and they're trying to hide out. And eventually they end up in conflict, and that's where it becomes a straightforward thriller. And it starts off really intriguingly because it's about two characters who are killers, who are doing this for either money or for ideology. And they're both generally terrible people, but the movie just kind of presents them as they are, with different motives for ending up in conflict. And you kind of understand where they're at, but in the end, it's Liam Neeson is the hero, Carrie Condon is the villain. They're going to face off, and that's it. And so it's okay. That's what it is. It's very much okay, because it's got two strong performances from Neeson and Condon, and it's serviceable as a thriller, and that's about it. But it has so much more going on just beneath the surface, and it never taps into that, except right near the start when it's promising all this stuff. But that never comes into the fold. Like, there's nothing about politics. There's nothing about morality. There's nothing about these two characters being basically the same, but just slightly different. It's just disappointing ultimately, but it's not bad.
There's a moment where, like, Liam Neeson, who has quit being a hitman, goes back to the guy who he worked for and is like, I know what I said about killing being bad, but, like, fuck this guy. I got to go kill him. And it really made me laugh. And I don't...
and I laughed too, because that's the plot.
I don't remember if I... Yeah, I don't remember if he said it like that or if I wrote it down like that. But, like, I wrote it down like, I know what I said about killing being bad, but fuck these guys. They suck. I don't think he said it like that, but that's how I interpreted it. That was my interpretation. And I really enjoyed that element of it. And there's some fun, kind of dark fun to be had with, like, the eager hitman who replaces him, that, like, he clearly is, like, the opposite of. Like, they have totally different values. But it doesn't do anything with that really either. It just kind of is slow and predictable and totally watchable, a little more mournful than your average Neeson because of a compelling story. At least at first, I found it to be compelling. Like, the opening scene, what happens in it, you're like, oh, shit. And you're expecting the repercussions to be more impactful in the story. And it just kind of is a background fodder, more so than the actual plot of it. And it's,
because when you get to the town, what's weird is the bigger crime is for the town is that they knocked down the welcome sign in town. That's what Kieran Hines's cop is looking into, not the bombing. It's like, hey, somebody knocked out our sign. I got to figure out who did this. Like, so there is instantly like this drop in stakes. You're right about that.
Yeah. It just becomes like, okay, yeah, it's just Liam Neeson with the fucking shotgun on the poster again. Like, it just becomes that movie eventually. There's an okay shootout towards the end. Like, it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. And, like, I think there was a period where Liam Neeson was rolling. It was mostly the Jean-Colette Seurat action movies he was doing, where I was like, three out of four, he's killing it. These movies are all really enjoyable. Probably like right after Taken, there was a period where he was really hot. And now, how many years after Taken has it been? 15 or 20, something like that? Like, a long time. And he's definitely gotten older. I don't know if that's the problem, but the last handful, I don't know, the last 5 to 7 Liam Neeson movies have been really, even the ones that went to theaters, they've all felt straight to video level, like Retribution and The Marksman was okay, I remember. Yeah, but there's other ones.
Robert Lawrence directed this and that one.
I couldn't even tell you the generic names of, Blacklight was a really, really bad one. Maybe the worst one.
You forgot Memory, ironically. Even though we talked about it.
Memory, Blacklight, Honest Thief, The Ice Road. Some people like Cold Pursuit. I did not. But The Commuter is arguably the last fun one, and that was 2018. So I'll give this one as like my favorite one since 2018, maybe. But it's still 2.5 stars.
Yeah, 2.5 stars for me too. It's not terrible. It's not bad.
It's like sturdily made. Yeah.
Yeah. It's well made. It is interesting, the characters. Again, Condon's great. Neeson is doing a lot of subtle stuff here that it doesn't seem like he's done in a while. He probably has, but it just feels that tone is so important. Just this idea of this existential dread of, you know, death and murder and all of the ghosts haunting them. You feel that at the start, and then it does become this formulaic thriller and it loses that weight. And that's too bad because it starts off really strong, but it's still serviceable as a thriller.
Totally.
So 2.5. Totally, it's agree. Okay.
Yeah, it's okay. The definition of it's okay right here.
Yep.
Let's move on to Asphalt City, which I think Mark would say is okay. And I would say is abhorrent, arguably. Like, it is, it's definitely intense. It's very intense. We could both agree it's one of the most intense movies, and it thinks it's really cool. I would also say, here's the trailer for Asphalt City, which was once called Black Flies and is based on a book called Black Flies. Here's the trailer.
You believe in heaven?
I don't know if I believe in heaven,
but I believe in hell.
How long you been on the job?
A few weeks.
This guy from Colorado. I'm putting him in the rut.
I usually get here 10 minutes early. I like to ride with partners who do too.
Yes, sir.
Tubi. The light, you know, Tubi.
Go, go, go.
You think these people like you?
Outside with the dog. We're trying to treat them.
I mean, yes, my team.
You think you're saving people?
I give you about 2 weeks.
Take it away. What is Asphalt City?
Asphalt City is a story of two NYFD paramedics just going about saving people's lives, trying to save people's lives. A lot of terrible things happening, and it affects them deeply. So Sean Penn plays the veteran. Ty Sheridan plays the rookie. Penn's veteran has seen a lot. He's basically dead inside. And Sheridan's newcomer is, you know, still optimistic. He's working
on his way to there, but he thinks he starts as very optimistic. Yes.
Yeah. Starts off optimistic. He's trying to get into medical school so he can become a doctor.
Yeah.
And he's got this, he's living in this, in the back room of a Chinese restaurant upstairs, something like that.
He's just having sex with his wife every night. It's unbelievable life he's living. Yeah.
Well, not wife. He met the woman he met at the club she's unimportant. It's one of the problems with the movie.
It's just so funny to me that like his outer life, like it's supposed to be like, you know, he's at work and then he's at home, but he just does one thing. It's like he fucks this woman and then he goes to work.
Yeah.
So that's like the way the movie treats it. It's very funny to me.
Yeah. And that's one of the problems with it. But, and I'm very curious, this movie has gotten a lot of hate, and I'm very curious about why, and I think I kind of have some inkling as to why, but I found it, at least at the start, just all of this pressure, and the way that just living with death and dying, just, it's like a virus almost, the way that it presents it, because it, like, as soon as Sheridan's character sees that guy die in the back of the ambulance for the first time, he just, it's like, what is he going to do? He doesn't know what to do anymore. The job for him has changed. It's not this idealistic thing. Now it's just, you know, desperation of trying to keep somebody alive, and it's not going to happen that often. And the fact that his character, when he was a kid, found his mother dead by suicide and he couldn't do anything about it. And that is kind of why he became a paramedic and wants to become a doctor and all that stuff. It's this interesting idea that being stuck in this sort of life and doing this sort of job just kills you inside. And I found that fascinating, especially because I think Sheridan's really good. I think Penn's best performance in a while.
I com- completely agree. I thought Penn was, I didn't really care much for Ty, or I didn't really think of anything, you know, it didn't stand out to me. But Sean Penn, like, unbelievably good in this movie.
Yeah, he's really good. So I was caught up in just that day-to-day grind of doing the job and how it affects them and how they can't talk about it. They can't talk about it because it's just too much to talk about even. So they yeah. talk about everything else, or they don't talk at all. But I found like the connection between the two of them, the way they gradually become closer to friends, or as close to friends as either of these two could become, just because they know they've seen the same shit. Like that word, that little kind of level of just development worked for me.
Sure.
So I was involved in it until it becomes something else. We'll get to that later, I guess, but.
Sure. I don't disagree with what you're saying. And I think that is a very compelling idea that like EMTs, like helping people, but hurting themselves in the process. I think that's really interesting, but this movie has like, you know, we talk about reactionary stuff a lot of the time. It has like a, what I've seen described as like, you know, a Fox News vision of New York City that it takes place in, where just every crime is some mentally ill, insane, horrible person doing something terrible and being really mean and awful and going through an episode clearly and is unwell. And like, yeah, that is a big problem in New York City. That like, I understand, like, I'm not trying to like shy away from like the reality of the situation. And I do think EMT's lives are very hard. And this movie may or may not be an accurate reflection of that. It just lays all of that on so thick. Why is every single person that they have to deal with, it's like always a poor person, it's always an ethnic person, it felt very agenda driven who they're showing and who they're helping and who they're not and all that stuff. And like some of it comes into play, I would say, in the plot of the movie and what it ends up being about, but not all of it. And so it just felt like it was doing so fucking much, and it was very agenda driven in terms of the setting, I guess,
I was wondering if that's what it was. And I think part of, and I do wonder how much of that is, you're in New York, I'm in Chicago, I have that level of distance of being able to watch this and be like, it's kind of weird that it seems like all of the violent people in this movie are this way. And I might have taken it personally if this was set in Chicago and it was about,
well, yeah, because, you know,
people shooting,
you don't live in, if you
time,
don't live
like,
in Chicago
more.
If you don't live in Chicago, the news out of Chicago looks like it's like fucking Iraq over there. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like there's shootings. Well, on the South Side, there are shootings every day. And like, I know you live in Chicago, you live in the suburbs. It doesn't affect, it's not a part of your life in any way. But the same thing applies here, I would say, where people think New York is this horrible place. And it's like, you know, there are, like any place, it has bad areas, blah, blah, blah. And people are, you know, unwell in certain in certain areas and shit like that. I don't know. It's a weird thing to want to discuss, but
it's personal when it's
and there's like an exploitation movie part of it that like I want to get behind. And like Bringing Out the Dead is a better version of this movie. This movie kind of exists. It's a little different. It goes in different directions. It's funny because Bringing Out the Dead exists and it's written by Paul Schrader, who also wrote Taxi Driver, which this movie ends up being kind of like, I would in a lot of ways. Also, why did Mike Tyson have to be the station manager in this? That was the most distracting, strange choice on earth. Not a good actor, like, and he's not teams.
Yeah,
he's not even stunt cast in a fun role. He's just like the guy who like runs the station where the EMTs go and just says a couple things a couple times. It's very strange.
They talk about him more, his character, more than he's actually on screen. It's weird,
you know.
It's almost, I wonder if the director realized, oh, this Mike Tyson
this isn't
a
working.
Good actor. Maybe just cut down those scenes.
You know, yeah, there's a lot to like in terms of, or a lot of interesting ideas in terms of losing faith in humanity while doing this, and we're all suffering and dying. But like, then there's like the God complex thing that happens. Is that the turn that you?
Yeah,
like,
that was the turn.
It
lost me with the whole. It's more about power. It's more about having control. That. The movie's bleak enough when you're just watching all of
it's
this
just
unfold.
Misery
watching,
man.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad in that regard because, and then you have the Michael C. Pitt character who just like, yeah. nobody says thank you. And he starts to beat the crap out of everybody. Like what? Yeah. It's yeah. too much. It is too much.
It becomes so much. And that's what, and then the agenda part of it starts to get really gross when it becomes that way. Cause it's like, and again, I think they might be making an interesting societal point with the grossness. If they're saying like, these look whose lives are, you know, EMTs have people's lives in their hands. And what is an EMT? It's just a fucking guy. Like maybe they don't have your best interests in mind. And like, that's a really scary thought. And I wish it was a better movie about this topic, right? Because I really think it's really ripe for like a horror movie or something. And this movie is trying to be like a horror movie version of a crime movie. It's just so soaked in like constant police lights and sirens and just noise and craziness and chaos. It's just relentless, horrible shit happening almost exclusively to poor black people or Mexican people or non-white people. And God, just the way the like the baby thing, the way that played out was disgusting. And like, again, it's a character move. It's not like I'm saying this movie is saying this is okay. I understand that it's not. I just found the whole experience to be like a lot. It's just a lot. It's a lot of movie. And at 80 minutes, I might have been like, this was cool. But it's 2 hours long. And this movie at 2 hours long feels like it's 4 hours long. It just is endless. Did you feel that way or no?
Yeah, no, it's just it's mostly just the piling up of misery. It just
yeah.
It's like I get it. I get it. And it's much.
And then you kind of know where it's going too, because like you're watching the rookie get, you know, who thinks everything's fine, and you're gonna see him become the veteran type of thing. It just does what it's gonna do. But the relationship with his not wife, whatever it is, it was just so funny. Like that poor woman, that poor actress who they hired, who they barely show her fucking face. She doesn't speak really. It's just really like, yeah, he fucks this woman, and this is a movie, so let me show you the fucking, because this is what you're all here for, right? It's just a very lurid. The whole thing is lurid.
It does. Yeah. It does feel lurid. And then where it goes, where that relationship ends up going, where you can see, you know, oh, I guess the power does affect him and the need to control does affect him. Like, why did you introduce this character just to do that to her? It's so weird. Anyway.
Yeah. Really, really strange stuff. I'm between 1.5 and 2. I don't know. Where are you?
I'm at 2.5. I think it is. I think it's a strong movie up until a point. Then it just gets so far up the whole misery channel that it doesn't work anymore. So that's where I'm at.
I think I'll stick with my 1.5, even though there's elements I appreciate. It doesn't stick the landing on any of it. But man, Sean Penn, what a performance. Maybe the only movie to go from the Cannes Film Festival in competition logo to then go Vertical Entertainment. That has never happened before. All right, let's talk about Dog Man, starring Caleb Landry Jones as the Dog Man, written and directed, I believe, by Luc Besson. Here is the trailer.
I always like disguises. It's what you do when you don't really know who you are, right? You dress up, you make up a pass to forget your own. Now you love dogs, huh? More than you love your own family.
I do.
You guys, you piece of shit!
Did you know anyone else? Somebody that could show you some attention or affection?
The child takes affection where you can get it. So they're my babies. As far as I can tell, they only have one flaw. They trust humans.
Another movie with a performance that I think is like strong, and a movie that I just don't think really works. If we hadn't seen this movie already, would we have felt differently? You know what I mean? If it just feels so much like Joker, which itself was so much like other movies, that it's hard to really view it as anything other than that was a weird riff on Joker about a guy who was abused and treated like a dog for some reason. And I have to note, Mark, you do realize this is the second movie written by Luc Besson about an abused man that gets treated like a dog, because he also wrote Unleashed, which is a great movie. If you've never seen Unleashed,
I believe. That one, so,
did you miss that movie?
I did. Yeah.
Wow. That was a while ago,
right?
That was about 20 years ago, probably.
Yeah.
That movie was huge for me. It was. I think I saw it in theaters. It was in 2005. It stars Jet Li, Morgan Freeman, Bob Hoskins. It's written by Luc Besson and directed by Louis Leterrier. And it is about a man who is trained to be a dog, essentially. So Luc Besson has a weird, I don't know what to call it, fixation. But that's just a note that everyone should watch Unleashed. It's a cool movie, especially Mark, who watches every movie on Earth.
Yeah, I somehow missed that one.
That's so funny. So every now and then we'll stumble across one of those, and it's very exciting for me every time. Anyway, it's weird movie, Dogman. Right?
Yes. Very, very weird. Speaking of movies that are a lot, this is a movie that's a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot. It's like, we haven't even mentioned, like, not that it's like, well, a part of it. He's a drag queen, drag wearing man who controls dogs, is the idea. But also, it's not like he's a superhero. That's where it's weird, right? Because it's like, he's just like doing crimes, kind of, and the dogs are kind of irrelevant to the crimes. The dogs are just kind of used superfluously. Like, he'll like have a dog help him commit a crime, but I don't know.
Yeah,
it's really
confusing. You could say he's exploiting the dogs in a way.
Yeah,
And also, I don't know, kind of abusing them by teaching them how to kill people. I guess
There's
a weird angle on that end that I don't think the movie quite figures out, just because it is doing so much. It is trying sort of a serious look at abuse and the effects of it. It is also being the crime story with a political angle to it. It's doing the whole mystery where you have a therapist come in and talk to him in prison and trying to figure out his life story. So it's almost a biography. And then, yeah, there's all the drag stuff, which just adds, I don't know, there's just something off about it. It just makes it feels as if Besson is trying to make this character be as weird as possible. And I didn't buy that as a hook when you are talking about a guy who has been abused since childhood and is trying to get past all that. He's paralyzed too, by the way. I forgot about that. He's paralyzed
from
the waist down.
His dad
shoots him and he's paralyzed. There's so much going on here. And the fact that the movie treats it as a weird thing and treats it for humor and treats it for camp did not sit right with me at all.
It's weird because it does that, but it also, yeah, you're right. It also tries to be genuine about it too. So it just like can't really, it's hard to decide what it's trying to do. Very committed performance by Caleb Landry Jones. I think he's very good. The character has too many angles. It's just like he trains dogs to steal jewelry from people. So he has a doggy crime ring. And then he wears it on stage in drag. It's like, okay. I really hate that structure, which I always compare to. It has the Joe Dirt structure where he's talking to Dennis Miller. Did you see Joe Dirt?
No, I have not seen
it. It's on record.
You have seen Joe Dirt. Okay. No, I don't think I have.
Oh, you haven't seen? Oh my God.
I have not.
You found two movies you haven't seen in one review. So Mark has the double feature of Joe Dirt and Unleashed to watch. That'll be a Patreon episode. Oh God, I completely lost track of what I was talking about. The Joe Dirt structure, where in Joe Dirt, he's on a radio show and everyone's listening in from across the country. And it's just Dennis Miller being like, tell me your story, guy. What's your story, babe? And he's telling his story. And so this is the same thing, but it's like an interrogation frame. So I found that to be funny for no reason other than I see Joe Dirt in every movie. I'm constantly looking for Joe Dirt.
I have noticed that on your Letterboxd account recently.
Constantly referencing Joe Dirt. Also, doesn't it feel like he just figured out that God is dog backwards and like made a movie about it? It feels like he says God a lot.
There
like
is that, that moment actually happens in here. He's it looking does. At a batter. It's backwards. Yeah. Like, hey.
It, really strange. There's this one review that I just need to read it because I couldn't. I'm not going to steal it, and I want to. I can't say it better. Patrick DMCF on Letterboxd said it is almost impossible to describe how bizarrely this flips between one, Caleb Landry Jones going through a genuine journey of self-discovery through drag and Shakespeare. And two, Caleb Landry Jones being an anti-hero who commands an army of dogs and kills Breaking Bad villains. That is a perfect description of what this movie is. It doesn't really make sense in any way other than as like an oddity. Like, isn't it weird that we made this movie where it's like a supervillain origin story, but about a guy, just a guy? Like, there's no superhero here. This isn't a Spider-Man villain origin. It's just a guy. He uses the dogs to bite a guy's dick off, but also uses the dogs to like take a phone somewhere and then bring the phone back to him. I enjoyed little stupid details.
I like that little scene where he's just trying to torture he convinces the local gang leader, like, don't mess with these people. And the way the dogs just somehow know. They just know. He doesn't even communicate with them. They just know, like, oh, yeah, I guess he agreed, so time to let go of that. And
he starts doing home invasions, right? Like, such a weird...
steal from the rich and give to the poor.
There's a Robin Hood element, like, yeah.
They talk about socialism in the holding cell. It's all over the place.
Oh, yeah, his dog shelter is, like, state-funded, and they take it away.
that's
a part of it, too.
All over the place. It is doing so much that you can't figure out what it actually wants to do. And I could not figure out the tone of it. I couldn't tell if it's trying to be genuine or if it's trying to be campy. I couldn't decide where it's at.
And the fact that Jones
is good here is kind of a miracle.
That's why it's so confusing, because you want to be like, he found the role. He found the character in there.
Yep.
But like...
Yep.
I don't know. There's something to the, like, you know, I mean, we've seen it a million times, but like the person who has a terrible life, who finds the arts and like, that's what he's able to use to like escape reality. And like, that's what it's doing in this movie. Right. Like, he is.
Yeah. We forgot about, he also becomes a theater kid for a while.
Yes. That's what I mean. Like, there's that whole subplot where a woman teaches him Shakespeare. Oh, that whole thing where like that poor woman who's so nice to him, but then she gets married and
how does he not know she's married? He follows her career religiously. He has a scrapbook of everything that has ever happened in her life. And he doesn't know she got married.
He's got the blinders on, man. He thought it was all for him. I think that's actually moving the drag element of it. That's all I'm trying to get to, is saying like, I actually see like there is a backstory to the drag. It's not just superfluous drag. It's like the drag is a part of the Shakespeare, is a part of the hiding from your bad life through art or plays, movies, whatever it is. And I just wish it was like, it's buried under so much other stuff, that it's hard to be like, the movie's good because it's about that. Because I'm like, it's not really about that.
No, it's not.
It's about a million other things.
Yeah, it's about everything else.
It's about so many other things. So if you're going to watch a Luc Besson movie about an abused man that gets treated like a dog specifically, I think you should watch Unleashed. And that's not just for Mark, that's for everybody. If you want to watch a movie where a dog's balls get stuck to a porch because it's cold outside, watch Joe Dirt. That does happen in that movie. I'm really keeping us on point. I got Joe Dirt 24/7. I could tell you every scene. For some fucking reason, I haven't even seen it that many times. I don't know why. Check out Joe Dirt 2, American Loser on Crackle. A
Crackle original, wasn't it? I remember covering it, and I realized, I'm okay.
You were like, does anyone have Crackle? I don't think it's a necessity to write this review. I'm going to go with 2 stars for Dogman, because there's some stuff in there that's interesting, but there's also a lot of stuff in there that's just like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, I'm giving it 1.5 because of that, all that other stuff going on. Could not find any except Jones's performance. Again, really good. But man, it's a mess. It's a mess of ideas and plot and genre.
Confused.
Yeah.
To say the least. So, like, you know, sometimes you can give a great performance in a really stupid movie. Speaking of that, they also kind of applies to our next film, I think, and our next one. It's the whole fucking theme of the day, apparently. Lousy Carter, starring beloved character actor and recent tweeter David Krumholtz. Here's the trailer.
You ever feel like a fraud up there? teaching?
Oh.
My name is Lousy Carter. I'm a literature professor.
I don't like you lounging out while I'm talking to you.
I have a troubling medical diagnosis.
Sorry about this.
I'm pursuing a grad student.
I'm fine with how you look. I have no, you're not my type, first of all.
Thank you.
This is my stalker.
I was a big fan of the film you made. The animated film from the early aughts.
Lousy Carter. They set themselves up for this, Mark. They really did. It's a lousy movie, unfortunately. I was rooting for it. I'm sure you were rooting for it. We all love David Krumholtz, I believe. I don't know if that's true of you, but I definitely like the guy. It just did nothing for me. What did you think of this?
It did very little for me, too. And I think it's mainly because it treats everything as a joke. So it doesn't quite work. And also, as good as David Krumholtz is here, his character is intentionally lousy. I mean, the name is accurate. That's why it's a nickname, too. That was confounding. Like, it's a nickname that everybody called him. He adopted it, and it seems to have become his personality. And I just, okay, that's the joke. But everyone else here is kind of treated as a joke. Martin Starr is the best friend. They're all, Jocelyn DeBoer is the wife, and Olivia Thirlby is in here. They're all just sort of distant and remote, and don't really seem as if they're a part of anything going on here. They're just there to sort of repeat the notion over and over again that Carter is lousy. And I got it pretty much from the start that, you know, this character is not very sympathetic. And the only thing that's sort of sympathetic about him is that Krumholtz can be very funny in a wry way. And he is sort of the sad sack, pathetic loser. He's playing that role really well. I didn't mean he is. I just mean he plays the character well. Phrasing of that was off. Krumholtz is really good. I always like seeing him turn up in a movie, and I'm glad he's getting more movies now after Oppenheimer. So keep going. But there is that level of just like this wall of irony that's up around the entire thing. And so I could not figure out where I'm supposed to get into this material, because it's definitely not the character.
Yeah.
It's not through all the supporting characters. Where am I supposed to get into this?
And also, like, the ultimate joke of it all is so annoying.
Which one? I mean? There's two. There are two ironic punchlines in this movie.
Yeah, I think the one that's like driving what you think is driving most of the plot. I don't want to say anything that would give it away, but like what you think is happening not being the thing that's happening. Pretty predictable, but also not that funny or interesting. It doesn't really render what happened before it any different or better. It's just one of those movies that's so slight I don't really have anything to say about it. It was an annoying movie about an annoying guy who is teaching a class on the Great Gatsby to people who think they know better than him, and
not much happens. He seriously is having an affair with his best friend's wife. He's trying to make
Martin Starr,
an animated movie. He's trying to make an animated movie of a Nabokov novel that's not Lolita, but it sounds a lot like Lolita. And so he's, you know, and because of his terminal condition that he's diagnosed with, he decides to try to sleep with a student, but maybe he's not trying to sleep with the young student. He's just trying to get her to be in the animated movie, or maybe it's both of them. That's
what I found kind of when I mentioned up top that I found it iffy and weird. Like, that's kind of what I was talking about. I'm like, so like, it doesn't even, I feel like it was going to be provocative and about that, but doesn't even commit to being about that. Like, I thought it was gonna be more of like a Miller's Girl sort of thing, but then it doesn't even commit to that. The ultimate joke is really not funny. And then the second thing that you're talking about, I think with regard to like Macon Blair, is also not funny or interesting, and actually doesn't really make any goddamn sense if you think about it. Like, why would that happen? It was a nothing of a movie. It just didn't work for me. But Martin Starr, Stephen Root's also in this. Like, everyone, National I like Charger a lot of people Stephen that are Root. In it. Yeah, and Andrew Bujalski, the filmmaker's in this, and it's like Bob Byington made it. So it's like mumblecore filmmaker, indie guys. I want to support it, but it just really didn't do anything for me at all. So check out Oppenheimer with David Krumholtz. It's a really good movie. 1.5 stars for Lousy Carter for me.
2 stars for me. Give it a little bit more credit, just because I think the Krumholtz performance is really good. I found some of it funny. in that ironic way, but not.
I couldn't
not
tell
a
you a
of
laugh.
It. Yeah, there's not. Yeah, there's not a lot.
I usually remember one. I usually remember a laugh.
Root saying that he doesn't really deal in dreams, and like, but you're a Jungian. Dreams are kind of the whole thing.
That's okay.
Stuff like that. Even little tiny exchanges that are.
Yeah, like clearly this writer can be clever. Let's move on to the last movie of the week. The last movie of the week, another movie with a good performance in search of a movie, is The Listener, directed by Steve Buscemi.
Hello, this is Beth. Hello? Take your time. Whenever you're ready. Okay.
So, you work nights?
Nights is what most people call.
I mean, I don't even understand it. I mean,
how is
sure you relate to anything that I'm saying?
I don't usually do this.
It's okay, don't worry about it.
Remember that Shudder movie we watched where there was a sniper shooting a woman in a convenience store, and he kept having political monologues that he felt like he was just box ticking modern issues? This movie has that same problem.
It kind of does, but from the other angle, where it's not getting shot, it's getting therapy. Like,
yeah, it's the opposite. I don't know if she's like a suicide specific hotline, or if it's just like a crisis hotline. She gets a variety of different calls from every societal problem in America calls in and sounds off for a second. And she just takes their calls and listens, and that's it. And that's the whole movie. It's an audio drama. It is not a movie. I love Steve Buscemi. I don't think there's a visual. You could argue there's a visual style here, maybe, but it's just a woman on the phone talking to people you don't see. And it just really did nothing for me. It is so goddamn boring. Even as an audio drama, it would have been boring. But as a movie, it's egregious. She just keeps taking calls. It feels like the last COVID movie we'll get, or like the last movie that feels like it takes place at the very early parts of COVID. Like, lockdown is new. People are talking about masks. It just feels like it already missed its window, and it's coming out in March 2024. I don't think anyone wants to watch a movie like this anymore. I think we are all over that period and the art that came with it. I couldn't get into it at all because of how labored it was and how self-important it felt, and how each call felt like it was addressing a certain subject and topic, and they're all reading their lines, and I just couldn't get into it as a piece of like anything other than very artificial. Like, I'm watching something that's very artificial. What did you think?
I got to give it a little bit more credit. I agree. It's better suited. It's too bad we don't have radio dramas anymore, because this would have been worked as a radio drama for sure.
Hey, check out Tales from Beyond the Pale. Larry Fessenden and Glenn McQuaid are keeping the radio drama alive with horror radio dramas.
There we go.
It's like a podcast. It's really cool. Check it out.
Okay.
A lot of recs for Mark. I hope Mark's writing these down today.
I definitely have written down Joe Dirt and Unleashed, and realize I'm not going to be able to watch them, but because they're not streaming anywhere easy. Anyway, that's beyond the point. I got caught up in just this the rhythm of it, and also the way that the rhythm kind of stops where she's on this call. It seems like the most important thing in the world at the moment to both of them, and then something will just stop. It'll just stop, and that person disappears. And eventually that did start to pile up for me, because you realize, like, oh, these are potentially matters of life and death. And, there's not much she can do. And that wears on her. I think Tessa Thompson is really good. I say that it would work better. We both agree it would work better as an audio drama. But if we did that, we would lose the whole reactive element of Thompson's performance, which I think is really, really strong. There's her voice is great, the way that she communicates and is calm and is all of that going on. But there's all these little sort of tiny things happening as she's reacting to the calls and how maybe they pertain to her life and how she connects to what that person is experiencing. She just has this level of empathy. You could see it on her face. And if it was an audio drama, you would lose that. So I think her performance holds it all together as much as it can be held together. Eventually, it does have this sort of screenwriterly thing. I agree with you. It's like just ticking off boxes of all the thing. But at the end, that last call is doing so much heavy lifting in terms of explaining who this character is, where she came from, while also having this big existential debate about suicide. And also the thriller element of this woman does seem to want to die by suicide. And so what is she going to do about it? It's so much going on just in that last call. And you realize how thin everything else before that is. But
yes,
I don't want to.
The Rebecca Hall call. She's in two movies this week.
She is. Yep. Her voice is only in this one. But
that's right.
I was caught up in some of the calls, less so in some of the other ones. That atmosphere of just things being lost, the ether as these people hang up.
Oh my god!
That way, last call is good, but I don't know.
Yeah. The guy who does deep fake porn and dead kid footage cut together to Disney music.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck was that? Like, it was just,
that was weird.
It really felt like they were trying to shoehorn in the subject. Yeah.
Yeah. But you have to assume people like that call these helplines to.
Yeah, I guess so.
People that way. And like it's gotta happen.
The most believable one was the one who wanted her to, like, he was essentially jerking off to her. Like, you could tell that that's what he was going for. And I feel like that must happen all the time to these poor people.
It's got to be hard work. And I think you get that sense of just how trying it is to have to deal with all of this stuff in the course of a night.
But like, what does the movie want me to, like, what's the overall message?
I don't know. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. Like, I know. That's the problem.
Don't call. Don't have these lines. Are these lines good? Are they bad? Like,
oh, they're good.
It doesn't have to take a stand or anything, but it just doesn't say anything. It just is a movie that's like, people have problems. Can you believe it? And then it's over. And I really wish it did anything. It's sadly a 1.5-star movie for me as well.
Oh, geez. Oh, yeah. See, I'm not going to be as dismissive as that. I've given it 2.5. I think the Thompson performance is really strong.
I would never say it to Steve Buscemi's face or anything like that. I would tell him I liked it, in fact, if I met him.
No, I would say like good. Trees Lounge. That was, I think that was his directorial debut. That's a good movie.
Yeah, that would get me brownie points. That would be much cooler.
Yes.
All right. Well, it was a week on the Roger and Me podcast, a week of performances that were good and movies that were not. We both agreed that Godzilla and Kong's performances were really good. We just didn't like the movie.
Kong's was. I don't know. Godzilla's pushing it a little bit. He's a little wooden at times.
Just thought that like a little pink makeover we would accept as change. We need a little more Godzilla, actually. All right. Thanks for listening. Please rate, review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you listen. But also don't forget to let me know about the audio. And also don't forget to listen to Alien Ant Farm right now. Bye.
The show starts in one.
Emotion, we seem.
Wait! Mateo!
Oh. I don't think I can go on.
Silence. Shut up. Ush.